Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscribe button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
There's nothing in our Constitution that actually protects lethal violence in the womb. 49 years ago, what we had was we had unelected justices simply impose their own personal beliefs about abortion on the entire nation.
What women during World War II were grumbling that only men landed on the beach in Normandy? No one was so insane to think of such a thing. They were to be admired. I don't find that now.
But really, with critical race theory, there's no redemption. It's simply an endless process of the oppressors oppressing the oppressed and the oppressed trying to fight back against the oppressors. And there's really no resolution.
The reason why the church is shrinking is because the church, in a very large amount of the population, has capitulated to the culture. And rather than preaching repentance and the forgiveness of sins, they are all trying to somehow placate the pagan world so that Christians can be liked.
On-demand listeners of Issues Etc. love hearing sound theology while walking the dog.
There's no doubt that the Democratic Party and its leadership are looking for something to run on in the midterm election, something other than the economy. They can't really run on that. Or our military entanglements in the world. That's a difficult one as well. And the issues just continue to work against them. What about the overturning of Roe v. Wade? Does it work in their favor? They seem to think it will, but will it, and where will it work, and where will it not work? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Molly Hemingway, a Fox News contributor, joins us to talk about the Democratic Party and the overturning of Roe v. Wade. We'll do a listener email on the Issues Etc. comment line. That email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, and the comment line, 618-223-8382. We'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson on creation in Genesis chapters 1 and 2 with Pastor Tom Baker. Then Joy Pullman, executive editor of The Federalist, joins us to talk about the teaching of history in government and public schools and a new curriculum standard. Joining us to discuss the Democratic Party and the overturning of Roe v. Wade, Molly Hemingway. She's a Fox News contributor, editor-in-chief of The Federalist, author of the books Rigged and Justice on Trial, and a column titled Democrats' Abortion Views Are Far Too Radical to Benefit from the Post-Roe Political Reality. Molly, welcome back.
It is great to be here with you.
Despite their public fuming, are many Democratic politicians and party leaders privately cheering the overturn of Roe?
Well, I'm not sure about what they're doing privately, but I think they are publicly saying that they think that overturning Roe will be politically beneficial for them. And I'm not sure if they entirely believe that or if they're just trying to come up with anything that will help them as their political prospects are looking extremely dire. The political views that they espouse have led to policy failures on all sorts of things, from crime to immigration to national security, foreign policy, the economy, inflation, gas prices, you know, all of these things are big problems. So they're looking at the abortion issue as something that they're reminded that it motivates their base, and they need their base to show up because they are expecting to have tremendous losses in November.
You mentioned some of the things, the political challenges that are facing them. What does it look like they're facing in the midterms and in terms of being returned to power, Senate, House, et cetera?
Yeah, so Democrats control everything in Washington, D.C., so that means that they bear the blame for what's happening in the country right now. So they control the presidency and will for several more years. They control the Senate and they control the House. Everyone expects the House to go Republican, and they think that Republicans might even get control of the Senate. That would be a reality even if things weren't going poorly for Democrats. Every time a new party takes power of the presidency, the houses of Congress, that party experiences losses in the midterm elections. So that's always the truth, but it's particularly true when people are extremely upset about the economy and what's happening in the country, as they are right now. I mean, I saw that Republicans had gained 1 million new voters in the last year, and a lot of people vote Republican but aren't actually registered Republicans. So gaining a million new registered party voters is just huge for Republicans. So the situation is very bad for Democrats right now.
What position on abortion in particular is the Democratic leadership pushing?
So this is what's so interesting about the Dobbs ruling. You saw a lot of corporate media lie about what the Dobbs ruling does. They said that it banned abortion nationwide, and it does not do that. It returns abortion law to the states, and it allows people and their elected representatives to debate and create policies about abortion. This is something that had not been allowed for nearly 50 years. It was taken away from the people, and they couldn't come up with policies that were the result of that kind of considered debate that you see in legislative efforts or ballot initiatives. So returning it to the states allows for a lot of opportunity for people to make their case on both sides. And the American people have fairly muddled views on this. The vast majority, it's a very unpopular view to support abortion through all 9 months of pregnancy. So the vast majority do not support that view, but they also tend to support allowing some abortions at earlier stages of pregnancy. And so that's what's so interesting about the Democrat position right now. It is, they want to make gains out of this overturning of Roe, but their own position is one of the least popular in America. I think it's only 17% will agree with the official Democrat position. And it's not just the official Democrat position. It's something they voted on as recently as May, where nearly every member of the Democrat Party supported this, which is abortion on demand through all 9 months of pregnancy, banning any limits or any protections for unborn children or their mothers, and permitting abortions for any reason, such as this child is a girl and I don't want a girl, or this child has a cleft palate and I don't want that. You know, this is a very radical position, but that's the one that Democrats are actually going with. And they even did it, you know, this weekend on Sunday shows, they'd say, do you support any limits on abortion? And the people would say, nope, no limits whatsoever. And so you would think that if they wanted to make gains out of this moment, that they would consider how radical their own position is and how out of touch it is with the vast majority of Americans.
Go into a little more detail on public opinion on abortion. What do we know?
Well, again, it's people are pretty muddled on it. I think it was a CBS poll that found that only 17% of Americans agree with the radical stance that abortion should have no limits whatsoever. In May, a Gallup poll found that 63% of Americans support making abortion illegal or legal only in certain circumstances. So that's a lot of room there for having debates over public policy. One thing that you've seen states do is begin to enact limits on abortion once children have reached a certain gestational age. So maybe after a heartbeat is detected or after 15 weeks. Much of Europe, which condemned the overturning of Roe, has laws that ban abortion after 12, 13, 14 weeks of pregnancy. And so there's been polling on how popular those types of limits are. And a majority were found in a Fox poll to oppose abortion after 15 weeks. Wall Street Journal recently did a poll showing that more people support a ban on abortion after 15 weeks than oppose that. And so lots of interesting things. And I will point out that polling tends to have structural biases that favor leftist positions. And so the fact that these polling numbers show support for some protections for unborn human life is pretty significant.
Give us some examples, if you would, of places where the overturn of Roe is unlikely to help the Democratic candidate.
Well, you know, first I might just point out that there are some places where it could. And I think it's important to note that that's a reality. So one of the things that happened in recent years is that suburban districts, House districts that had voted for, you know, those types of like neoconservative Republicans, they became Democrat districts. And I know Republicans were hoping to get some of them back. So I would say there may be a half dozen or so districts where Republicans thought they might have a long shot, but a shot where that'll be limited now because those districts tend to be populated by wealthy, college-educated, white women, you know, a base that really supports Democrats' hardline position. But if you look at it elsewhere, it's not nearly such a good situation for them. You know, I do think it's interesting that in Virginia, which is where I live, which is a very purple state at best, you would have called it a blue state until recently, they are looking at enacting some protections for fetal life after 15 weeks. You take a state like Nevada. The current incumbent Democrat senator is a woman named Catherine Cortez Masto, and she's running against Adam Laxalt. Adam Laxalt is endorsed by pro-life groups. When he was attorney general, he signed on to a legal brief supporting the Little Sisters of the Poor, who you might remember were persecuted by the Obama administration and fined because they wouldn't pay for abortifacients as part of their health care plan. Well, Catherine Cortez Masto just voted for that very radical abortion bill that would have forbidden any protection for any child for any reason. Now, I'm wondering, is that really going to help her in Nevada, a state where more than one out of four voters is Hispanic, the vast majority of those people being either Catholic or evangelical? Are they really going to want that kind of radical position? Is that going to make them more likely to vote for her? I think it's unlikely. You look at Pennsylvania, which is a state where Democrats actually have been pushing the abortion issue. The Democrat nominee is a man named John Fetterman. He came out hard for this radical abortion bill in May as a way of winning his primary. He's running against a guy who's not particularly conservative, Mehmet Oz, but who is self-identified as a pro-lifer, but says he supports the opportunity to have abortion, you know, in limited cases. Is that really going to help John Fetterman in Pennsylvania, a state, again, that has, you know, one of the last places where Democrats actually used to be openly pro-life and that was, you know, very working class value? So Democrats are trying to publicly pronounce that they think this is going to be a big gain for them, a big boon for them politically. But when you actually look at what happens and when people have to articulate what their views actually are, they're articulating some extremely unpopular views that most normal Americans think are just way beyond the pale.
So how and why did the Democrats on this issue of abortion paint themselves into this political corner that is their position on abortion?
I don't know. It's interesting how each party has changed. I think the Republican Party for a long time was seeking, you know, you'd see them talking a lot about the benefit of corporations or free market economics and less about the family. And now you see Republicans talking much more about the need to strengthen families and less about the need to support or, you know, subsidize big corporations. Well, Democrats used to be people who did care more about family, I think, and it was not that long ago, although it's, you know, it's becoming decades now, where you would meet strong pro-life leaders in the Democrat Party. They were also pro-union. They were thinking about how to have an economy that enabled family formation. And for some reason, Democrats began thinking that their future was with a more radicalized base of single, unmarried, college-educated women or just single women in general. And that put them at odds with this past that they had had. So you've just seen a lot of decades of them losing what used to be a very family-friendly voting bloc. But, you know, it has worked out for them in other ways. Like we talked about the suburban districts that are dominated by some of these single women. Their policies match well with keeping women unmarried and dependent on government, or it has kind of worked for them in a way, even if it hasn't been particularly great for the country or for women.
How has the overturn of Roe and its aftermath further derailed the Democrats' political narrative?
Well, that's another thing that is fascinating to observe. So prior to Dobbs and the overturning of Roe v. Wade, you had the only thing Democrats were running on was this desire to paint January 6th as like the worst thing in the history of mankind. And so ignoring all of the political violence of 2020, the hundreds, the thousands even of riots that were deadly that led to massive property damage, attacks on the White House, attacks on federal courthouses, police precincts, you know, houses, churches. They wanted to just focus on this one riot where right-wingers had attacked the Capitol. And that's basically the only issue that they've been able to go with because of how bad everything else is. So now, at the very same time they're running that operation, you have prominent leaders of the Democrat Party telling people to get out in the streets, questioning the legitimacy of the Supreme Court, threatening to pack the court or do other attacks on the court, not really saying anything or even encouraging failed assassination attempts on justices, dozens of attacks on pro-life maternal care centers, Christian churches, the two narratives are completely at odds with each other. And yes, they have the benefit of having a corporate media propaganda press that downplay the conflict between those two narratives. But I think most Americans look at that and say, oh yeah, we know that the left is kind of where most political violence takes place. We're seeing it take place throughout the country now, and it just hurts their January 6th narrative, which is where they've put all their resources up to now.
Fox News contributor Molly Hemingway is our guest. We're talking about the Democratic Party and the overturning of Roe v. Wade. What role have the media played?
The Church's music from the 20th century. The 17th century. The 11th century. The 8th century. The 4th century. The best of the Church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Truth, freedom, and vocation are the pillars of a Concordia University Chicago education. Through them, we form our students for lives of influence and service for the common good. This is the education American society needs right now. I'm Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia Chicago, and I invite you to visit us to discover what it means for truth, freedom, and vocation to become the pillars of your future. Learn more at cuchicago.edu.
Do you know any military veterans in your church or community? Do you have a passion to support and reach them with the gospel of Jesus Christ? Then Operation Barnabas is for you. Called by Christ's love, Operation Barnabas engages, empowers, and equips LCMS faith communities to provide hope, healing, and support to military-connected persons living in their community. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the Democratic Party and the overturning of Roe v. Wade with Molly Hemingway, editor-in-chief of The Federalist. A belated 83rd birthday to the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary, LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces supports all Lutheran Church Missouri Synod chaplains who serve in the Coast Guard Auxiliary, on active duty, in the Reserves, the National Guard, and Civil Air Patrol. Find out more about their work at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve, LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces, lcms.org/armedforces. Molly, what role have the media played in all of this?
Well, you know, it's interesting because my whole interest in media began because I noticed how they covered abortion. And I know I've learned on your show before, I've heard people talk about it, including Terry Mattingly, about that David Shaw discussion of abortion coverage in the Los Angeles Times in 1990. Abortion is the topic on which the corporate press are the most out of line with public opinion, and they are the most rabid. And so it's sad, but I'm not particularly surprised to see how they're covering this Dobbs ruling and the overturning of Roe. But they're really going to be putting all efforts into supporting their political allies on the left, who will not be happy unless abortion is legalized and subsidized through all 9 months of pregnancy and maybe even beyond. And so you see this in how some media outlets have actually been posting the addresses of these maternal care centers that terrorists have been attacking, running hit piece after hit piece on pro-life maternal care centers where women are given options other than abortion. You see them presenting false information about the Dobbs ruling. I mean, one of the things that I keep seeing all over the place is that returning abortion law to the people and their elected representatives is, quote, anti-democratic, quote. Now, Roe was the decision that banned the public debate and ability to weigh in on policy. It was the most anti-democratic ruling. They never presented it that way. And then when Dobbs returns it to the people, then they present it as anti-democratic. And democracy is there is another big propaganda push they're working on this year, where they say that if you have policy positions that are opposed to their policy positions, that that is somehow anti-democratic. So just widespread propaganda from our corporate media. I don't think anyone's surprised. Polls show that support for or trust in corporate media is in the single digits among conservatives, and it's for good reason, and it's because people can see what they're doing every day.
You mentioned this claim that the U.S. Supreme Court is illegitimate. How do you respond to that?
Well, you hear people on the left say that the Supreme Court is illegitimate every single time they issue a ruling that differs from the preferred policies of the left. And it is dangerous to question the legitimacy of institutions. People should not do that willy-nilly. And they certainly shouldn't do it because people are issuing decisions that are based on the Constitution and not on the policy preferences of the most left-wing portions of the Democrat Party. Senator Chuck Schumer had questioned the legitimacy of the court and threatened two of its justices in the spring of 2020. Senator Whitehead from Rhode Island has repeatedly questioned the legitimacy of the court. It is something that is rising in prominence on the left, but it's a dangerous attack that should be pushed back against because our constitutional system is important. The integrity of it is important. And, you know, it's not good to have a portion of the country questioning it.
Talk about the continuing violence and the threats of violence from abortion supporters.
I've been kind of interested in the violence that we have seen from the left. There was quite clearly a concentrated and widespread encouragement of incitement against Supreme Court justices, where you had organized teams staking out the homes where they live, sometimes with their spouses and young children. And then these attacks, sometimes with chilling advance warning on these pro-life pregnancy centers. I don't quite understand how violently attacking and threatening to kill people in the pro-life movement helps them politically. You know, this terrorist group, is it Jane's Revenge, that has the tagline, "If abortion is not safe, then neither are you." And they've been leaving this threatening, menacing message at the pro-life pregnancy centers that they attack, and they have declared open season on people who help women and their children. Again, this is a very radical position, extremely radical against a group that everyone understands is sacrificing a lot to help out women and children in need. Only with the support of corporate media could this not be the number one issue. But it's also very troubling that Merrick Garland, who heads the Department of Justice, has done next to nothing about these violent attacks. I mean, in the midst of some of the worst assaults on the homes of the Supreme Court justices, he and the U.S. attorney came out with a statement saying, political protest is fine. Well, political protest at the homes of Supreme Court justices with the intention of changing and intimidating them and changing a ruling actually is illegal, so it's not fine. And for the head of the Department of Justice to not know that is deeply concerning. The open terrorist threats against churches and pro-life centers has been met with nearly no response. You know, you have a Department of Justice that is willing to do everything in its power to put every grandmother who was within a mile of the Capitol on January 6th in prison, but they can't combine their resources to get after who exactly is orchestrating this terror campaign, this domestic terror campaign against pro-life pregnancy centers and churches. It's a very limp and ineffective work they've been doing thus far, even as they use all of their resources to go after some of the most ludicrous things. I mean, I'm recalling like a couple of years ago, there was a NASCAR driver who misinterpreted a garage pole as a noose, and it was a racist threat. And they sent like 12 FBI agents down immediately to investigate. Would be good to have similar resources put on this terrorist campaign that is being openly bragged about and on is out there for everybody to see.
How can the Democratic leadership and the media be so out of touch with public opinion?
Well, they live in Washington and New York. They are in newsrooms that are little bubbles of pro-abortion activism, and they always have been. I mean, we used to actually poll and survey what was going on with reporters, and we found that they had far left political views, but none so much as on abortion. And so they think that if everyone in their newsroom thinks it's awful for Roe v. Wade to be overturned, that that's the viewpoint everybody has. I mean, you remember it was not that long ago that you had that serial murderer abortionist Kermit Gosnell on trial. It was the biggest news in pro-life circles, and no major media outlet was covering it until they were shamed into covering it. That's because they don't know any pro-lifers. They don't employ any pro-lifers. They don't study pro-lifers. They are completely isolated, and they're not media. I mean, they're not news media. They're not in the business of reporting on or sharing the news. They're in the business of pushing propaganda and false narratives. And so nobody should be surprised when they do that, because they've been doing it for decades. And at some point, if you act surprised, or if you say, oh, well, look at this, they're not being fair, then you just shouldn't be commenting on it. Because like, how many decades do they have to treat pro-lifers like second-class citizens and lie about them and lie about what their interests are before people say, okay, well, this is just what we're dealing with, and we have to react accordingly and not be surprised every time.
Finally, what message should pro-life Republicans be sending here in the aftermath of Roe?
I mean, there's so many messages to be sending. First off, it's just a wonderful victory. I mean, a lot of people put a lot of effort into this for 50 years. Many of those people didn't even live to see the day of Roe v. Wade being overturned. This is a success story. It shows what can happen when people work together and pray and think smartly about how to stop an injustice. And it's also kind of sobering, because Roe v. Wade was such a bad decision that overturning it simply means that now pro-lifers have the opportunity to advocate for policy solutions that they support at the state level. It's a huge victory on one hand, and then on the other hand, it's just getting to the starting line and having the shackles taken off that had been on the pro-life movement for 50 years. So there's a lot of excitement and opportunity. It's going to depend on each state, what is done to legally protect unborn life and the life of the mothers and the families that need to be formed to support those children. And there's just a lot of work to do and a lot of opportunity, some of it at the legislative level. Sometimes it's just at helping neighbors in need or setting up organizations that can help young families or families that could use the help, and just continuing that great work. There's been a benefit of that 50 years that the pro-life movement had to work, that they have set up quite a few institutions and have come up with incredibly creative ways to help serve women and children. And those things need the resources as much now as they ever did.
Molly Hemingway is a Fox News contributor, editor-in-chief for The Federalist, author of the books Rigged and Justice on Trial, and a column titled Democrats' Abortion Views Are Far Too Radical to Benefit from the Post-Roe Political Reality. You can read it and purchase Molly's books at our website, chooseetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. Molly, thanks.
Thank you.
Up ahead, listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line. We'll start with a little recap of this last weekend's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference. Thanks to our beloved on-demand listeners, Issues Etc. consistently ranks among the top podcasts in religion and spirituality. You can help us climb the charts by subscribing, rating, and reviewing Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit the subscription button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for podcast listeners to find Issues Etc. Help us cast Christ's net on the internet. Subscribe, rate, and review Issues Etc. today.
This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we continue our journey through the Apocalypse, the book of Revelation, with the fifth trumpet part 2, the sixth trumpet, the little scroll, eating the scroll, and two witnesses. Join me, Pastor Will Whedon, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily 15-minute verse-by-verse Bible study on demand. Listen at thewordendures.org or your favorite podcast provider.
Making Disciples for Life. Across the nation, students are back in school in over 1,800 schools serving children in early childhood through high school. Students are thriving in programs of excellence in a safe, caring, Christian environment taught by dedicated teachers. To find a school in your community, visit lcms.org/schools. Connect today for information about a Lutheran school for the children in your family at lcms.org/schools.
Traditional liturgical worship, it's so much more than a style preference. It reflects transcendence in the divine service. The living God comes to us in real space and time through the word and sacraments. Hi, this is Pastor Nigel Brown from Hope Lutheran Church in Hampton, Virginia. If you're looking for reverent worship and serious Bible study, look us up. We're in Hampton with Bible studies in Hampton and Williamsburg. We celebrate the divine service with communion every Sunday. Check us out at hopehampton.org.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
At the center of our campus is Kramer Chapel, and there's a reason for that.
Issues Etc. guest, Dr. Arthur Just.
Because it is the heartbeat of Concordia Theological Seminary. It is where we go to hear the voice of Jesus and frequently be fed with the body and blood of Christ. We sometimes call it our Jerusalem. Kramer Chapel points to the classroom, which we sometimes call Athens. It is there that we do theology, biblical studies, systematic theology, practical theology, history. We love theology here, and we love the study of it, and we love coming together in worship. It's one of the things that gives us great joy. Joy in worshiping, joy in studying theology. Concordia Theological Seminary is all about the joy of being in Jesus.
Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, ctsfw.edu.